Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. For those of you who don't know me, my name's obviously Mark, and I am love. I'm in love. I am love. Yes, this is true. But I'm in love with understanding human behavior, why we do what we do. I'm obsessed with it, with understanding how our relationships, how to create the most epic ones, you know, all the stuff that's important, like how life delivers us smash after smash of cosmic 2x4 when we're not paying attention or when we're ignoring something. And there just seems to be these cycles of our lives too, isn't there? Where you're like, things are good, and then all of a sudden, push, all right, new lesson. And they call this in your late 20s, the Saturn return. I'm 46 now, so maybe I've done another loop around Saturn. And I feel like I'm just coming out of that now. Uranus does something to you around 42. So maybe I'm coming out of that. But either way, I think this conversation about how to move beyond those thresholds is important. And I'm so excited because today's guests are the creators of the number one critically acclaimed wellness podcast, Almost 30. They've had just profound success because they spoke and continue to speak from their experience and their heart, and people relate to them. They're incredible humans. They're very successful. They're best friends who navigated their late 20s side by side talking about it. And now they've written a book called Almost 30, A Definitive Guide to a Life You Love for the Next Decade and Beyond. And as someone who is beyond 30 by a significant portion, every single one of the lessons in there, each chapter, resonated deeply with my own being. So I'm so excited for you to hear this, because no matter what your age is, it's going to resonate, because these are principles that we ideally would be taught young and then could implement them in the way that we orient to the challenges of our life. And so we get to learn them now and bring them into our life, implement them in our life, and change our life. So before we dive into the episode, wherever you're listening to this, make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any more episodes. That's also a way that you could support the show that costs you nothing and means everything to me. It's the only ask I'll ever make. I love and appreciate you. Also, for Lindsay and Krista, go buy this book as you're listening to this. Helping authors sell at the week that their book comes out is incredibly helpful. And if this episode resonates with you and the subject that I'm talking about resonates with you, go buy this book now. The audiobook is incredible too. I've heard snippets of their recording of it. Without further ado, here they are. Okay, let's start. How do you feel about things in or around your butt? That's a good icebreaker question. Yeah, it's
like I'll let the lady dating go first.
Yeah, is that an almost 30 question?
Like, it is.
Is that an almost 20?
That's a period of time in time when you really need to determine your butt relationship and the relationship with things in and around your butt. And I think it's really important to get honest with yourself. Yeah, to get honest and clear.
When we say Saturn return, the rings, we're actually talking about your butthole. Yeah, right? Yes.
And that's the Uranus return, yes, right? Yes. Yes, to return to your Uranus. Yes. I don't even think that's how you pronounce Uranus.
It's Uranus. It's all good, Mark.
That's bullshit.
Literally.
Yeah, that's just meant. We're meant to fuck that
up. Oh, you know what word I can't say? Inquiry.
Inquiry?
Inquiry?
You can't do it?
I say inquiry.
Yeah, inquiry. That's what it sounds like.
When you're reading your audiobook, I had to go over eight. Inquiry.
Oh, man, reading your audiobook is inquiry. Both great.
Amazing.
But also because you're like, oh, I forgot about this
yes.
part. That's good.
Yes.
That's so good. How I felt yes. when we were. But also, you forget the meaning of words.
Totally.
Did you find that?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yes.
Or I was like, wow, run on sentence.
Yeah, that's what I felt like.
You like don't have breath by the end.
How did
like,
the editor
Jesus.
Let this go?
Yeah, there was like literally.
Ah, the breath. That's so true.
There were sentences that were paragraphs long where I was like, what?
How did this pass?
And then all of a sudden I'm like.
Yes.
Okay, let's go. Okay.
And it was what I think is crazy is that you could make each thing completely different the way you said it. You could be like, and we went to the store and it was totally fine. You could be like, and we went to the store and it was totally fine.
I know.
You know, like, I just thought that was insane. The energy you could completely change the whole word with.
The gift of, and that's why voice is such an upgrade from written. And I'm an audiobook person. So, I mean, this is the best intro. We started off with butts. And, you know, I was joking, but great way to start. For those of you that don't know these incredible ladies, they're the hosts. They love butts. They're the hosts of the Almost 30 podcast. So your reputation really does precede you. And they just released their new book, Almost 30, A Definitive Guide to a Life You Love for the Next Decade and Beyond. Congratulations.
Thank you. On the book. Thank you.
Man, this must feel like a real coming home, hey?
Yeah, man.
Does it?
It actually really does. It felt, I think the part that felt like a coming home was we started on our closet floors, you know, when we were in our 20s and had no intention of it becoming anything. And then when we were reading our audiobook in New York, in like a production studio that felt like a closet with no video, just us like talking on mics. It felt like a coming home. And then last night we did an event here in Venice that was like a small event with just a bunch of women. And I was like, that's what we did at the beginning, was we just brought women together in small circles. And so it really has felt like that. And it's felt like a beautiful just capstone on the journey, you know, that we've been on in the past 9 years together as best friends, building our business. It's like crazy.
Yeah, and to think that it's like, it's been just about 10 years where, you know, I think a lot of people can look at what each of us does and kind of assume that, oh, they probably had like a big pop overnight. And it really has been both personally and professionally such a process.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I will forever be just bowing down and in respect of the process in life. You know, I think we've kind of lost respect for that. We're like, well, how do we get $1 million dollars tomorrow and six figures on Friday? It's like,
that'd be great.
This has, this would be great. Let me know if you find the book, but it has been like just a process and so intertwined together as far as like, you know, our success, I think has largely been due to our ability to tend to our relationship and like really, you know, commit to our own self-work. You know, it was about building a business, but like the business didn't stand if those things weren't solid. So it's just been such a cool.
And I think in the entrepreneurial process, I've realized that the business is a reflection of me. So it's just been self-growth the whole time, you know, with all of it. It's like, how am I showing up in the world? How am I being perceived? How am I with my team? You know, it's like, it's just a whole process.
It is. And, you know, I still think this on some level, but that relationships are the most potent space for change. And so, of course, your relationship to one another, relationship to employees, et cetera. But I actually now I'm a firm believer that entrepreneurship might be real close. And entrepreneurship with partnership, that's like a whole other avenue, especially when the beginning of the journey is not like partnership agreements and, you know, which is Stan Takin. I remember him saying that the greatest predictor of a relationship succeeding is the reason they fail is a failure to create clear agreements at the start. And I think about that from a partnership. So you guys are starting in your closet. You're not, you're thinking we're going to record some musings, things we're struggling with.
Well, we were thinking we were gonna record some philosophy, and it was so bad. Like the first episode was probably 25 minutes of nothing, and then we're like, okay guys, we're gonna be really real with you about things, and it was like nothing was said. We were two girls that were really lost, but we had no agreements at the beginning. But I will say that we have later on in our business, like I would say like 3 years in, I was like NDAs with everybody. Like very contractually.
We made it a business like quite, like probably a year in, we were starting to treat it like a business. And in doing that specifically on the partnership piece, you know, in the beginning it was a little muddy where I'm like, what am I doing? What are you doing? If she was doing a lot, I'm like, shit, I need to do more in order to be like considered valuable here. But we really established like, what are you great at? What am I great at? Let's actually stay in our lanes. We can come together once a month and just kind of like check in and make sure everyone's good. But like really owning certain parts of the business, I think was really helpful. And then, you know, kind of having a structure of sorts. Like we would, you know, meet. I mean, we were working our full-time jobs for at least 2.5 years of the podcast. And, you know, we would meet every weekend and we would record and we would kind of go over business stuff, like just treating it like a business before we made a dollar, you know,
which
was great and set us up.
How did you guys determine that it was time to create a framework?
for the business.
Yeah.
I had been in the corporate world. So I grew up in the corporate world. I was in finance, management, consulting, and a bunch of different businesses. I was so desperate to get out of my miserable job life that I was like, I'll do anything to make this work and be structured and framed. And I had actually quit my job to pursue blogging without any frame or structure, got myself in a lot of debt, was working random jobs. And so I knew I didn't want to have that happen again. I was like, I want to succeed. I want this to work. And so in that desperation, I was like, I'm going to just make framework or build a business in a way that feels sustainable. And I think that was so beautiful, part of like the masculine I was in. Like I was much more masculine during that time. Like I was much more go-getter, much more just structured in the way that we were running. But I think when I think about our relationship and our work, like there's a lot of talented people in Los Angeles. There's a lot of talented people in the world, but not all those people really can create structure and frame and actually build a business that's sustainable, because it's the unsexy things. Like looking at our ROI forecasting, like doing the contracts, doing like the LLC stuff isn't fun, isn't sexy, isn't feminine, but it was something that we were willing to do because we really wanted it to work. And so I'm grateful that we kind of had that energy behind us to do it, because we knew we wanted to really make it something, because you wanted out of SoulCycle. I wanted out of the corporate world. We didn't know it would become this, but we were just like, we have to get out of where we were.
Who is the one who ideated, let's start a podcast?
Krista. So she came to me one day. We had been friends for, I would say, about 6 months, and we're just going through it. We were just navigating a lot of change, a lot of feelings of like, damn, I thought I would be farther along in my life, or the plan that I thought is kind of going to shit. And she came to me one day. We were having coffee at Bulletproof, at the Bulletproof Cafe.
It's actually breakfast. During that time, yeah. our latte, Bulletproof lattes, was our breakfast.
Oh, yeah,
our
breakfast. MCT.
Yes, because
butter.
We were intermittent fasting during that time.
Yeah, it was my go-to. I was fasting
on it.
Every day.
I'm still on it.
It's three.
I love a good intermittent
fast. Dude, no.
Yeah. But it's for dudes. It's for, more for dudes.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Once you get a little out of the masculine into the menstrual.
Honestly. Once I started having a regular period again, I was like, I'm out.
Yeah, once you throw ovulation into the
honestly,
mix.
Once I started taking puberty blockers, I stopped.
So she came to me and she's like, you know, do you think we can start a podcast? And I was like, I don't know what a podcast is, basically. I was like, but I'm always down to do anything creative.
Yeah.
And, you know, without knowing what it would become or needing a plan or anything, I was like, let's do it. I have a $15 recorder in like my kitchen drawer. Let's just start recording. Your closet, I think, will have great acoustics. Let's just like make it a thing every single
week. That's why the closet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The good acoustics.
Great
baby.
Acoustics.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Clothes absorb
shoes.
The room.
Yes.
Wow.
It was stinky and smelly. We couldn't breathe, like, but our acoustics were good.
So we consistently came together for 6 months. Mm-hmm. Basically just like getting to know each other more, understanding our chemistry, you know, like really like practicing speaking. You know, I think both of us had experience speaking in different ways. I was a SoulCycle instructor. I kind of had the
on the mic. Up and down.
Yeah.
SoulCycle. I didn't know that.
Pony swinging.
Which one?
New York. And then I moved out to Open Newport. And then I would teach in Brentwood, Santa Monica. All
I've
the
been
things.
In Newport one.
Yeah.
That's funny, man. I didn't know you.
That's
front
how we
row
met.
Is the scariest place.
The scariest place.
I don't go there.
Oh, I know. I used to have I'd be like, unless I'm in front row, I'm not even going to this class.
Oh, man. Like, savage chicks in the front row.
So weird.
Like you miss a beat, they're like, what are you doing?
Yes.
I'm like, wow. Yes. Oh my God.
And it's so like, I mean, I love you, SoulCycle. It's so unhealthy. To be
so much cardio.
And,
the nervous system is just like,
dude. It is really fun. I'd say like if you do it once a week, if that's like your jam, amazing. If you're going every day, I'd say.
I think you might have an addiction to something else called exercise.
Yeah.
Okay. So where are you both at that point, like life-wise? Because I've had the honor of, I think I was on your podcast probably in like 2018.
Yeah.
Or
yes.
Wow. And so I've had the opportunity to witness both your journeys and it's been really beautiful.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, where were you both then? Because I think of all the people listening to this, no matter their age, because this book isn't just for people who are 27 on a Saturn return, because apparently the Saturn return comes for your ass again at like 40 something. Mm-hmm. Right?
And Saturn really works on you throughout your life. Mm-hmm. So it's it's actually a really, this is kind of like the priming of the lessons that Saturn is going to offer you throughout your life. And it's probably going to be one of the most intense because it's the, you know, like mm-hmm. the first real one. Yeah. But yeah, it'll offer you lessons. But where were you, Krista?
So when we met, I think I was with my then husband. So I was, I was in a relationship for 10 years from 2014, from 2011 to 2021, 2022, sometime 10 years of my life, yeah, I was yeah, in yeah. a relationship.
There was a numbers forgotten are decade.
Not my thing for a decade. So I was in a relationship. I thought I knew. I was like, this is my person. Life is good. Everything is fine. But outside of that, I was really struggling with my purpose. Like, I just have always felt like I'm here for a reason. And I think back then it looked differently. It looked like something that would cause me anxiety and stress and just make me feel like I was never enough. It was kind of like my worthiness wound just kind of popping off, really trying to prove myself in the world. And I was depressed and anxious. Like, I just was so unhappy being in the corporate world. I hated that structure. I hated that environment. And so I wanted to do anything to get out. So creating the podcast was really a part of that. But in that struggle too of being in the corporate world, I was also burning myself out because we had been working our full-time jobs, building the business, working on weekends and nights and going on tour. So my body completely, you know, responded and I just got really sick. Like, I had really bad adrenal fatigue. I put on a bunch of weight. I could not get out of bed. I felt ill all the time. And everything that I was doing up until that point, as far as working out and living, just wasn't working anymore. And it was like my rock bottom moment of realizing that my body had been listening to everything I had been saying and that I couldn't do what I had been doing anymore. Mm. So although on the outside, it looked like we were succeeding with almost 30 at that point in time, I was feeling really lost still. And I was feeling really out of sorts with my body. And relationally, I was going through my own things, but I think the relationship part was one thing I always felt like I had, even though now I'm out of that relationship. I always was like, oh no, I'm with my person. It's all good.
Yeah. And obviously, it's the other stuff.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, it's the other stuff one.
Yeah. Really. And I had just gotten out of a long-term relationship who I thought was my person. I was like, I am going to marry this guy. I remember telling my Nana one Christmas, she's like, is he the one? I was like, absolutely. No doubt in my mind. Meanwhile, I'm like 22.
You know? Yeah, I've given that title away a few times.
Oh, yeah, dude, 100%.
Getting it back is a tough one. That's,
I know.
That's eating a humble pie.
Nana will not let you forget.
Not the one.
Yeah, honestly.
Let me back that one up.
It's crazy because the lies you tell yourself, you know what I mean? Like when you're like, oh, they're the one, or like you don't tell the truth to everybody about everything. Mm-hmm. I think that was my experience.
They're the one who is going to destroy my secure attachment style and make me disorganized. Yes. Perfect. Yes. What a gift.
So I was in the wake of that breakup and I was the one that ended it. I was the one that cheated, blew it up. I had not been listening to just that whisper of my soul that was saying like, hey, it's probably not your person. And so I just totally sabotaged it. So that kind of sent me into a dark place because I was like, who are you?
Yeah, self-perception gets
obliterated.
God.
Yeah. It was really, really confronting. And then, you know, I think my move to LA was this kind of like bright light opportunity, knowing, you know, I got a call one night from a SoulCycle boss of mine that was like, do you want to move to LA? You can have the conversation or not, but we want you to open a studio. And I was like, yes. I did not hesitate. And that was the first time in a very long time that I trusted myself. I had an inner knowing that it was a yes. I said yes, and I didn't look over my shoulder to see if other people approved or the like. So that move was very profound. But, you know, at the same time, I was catapulted into singledom and I was choosing the wrong people. I was chasing after guys who had no time for me, who just really, I was like settling for less than stellar behavior across the board. My sense of self-worth. If you would have asked me at the time, like, are you confident? Like, do you value yourself? I'd say, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But my actions said differently. And then I was in a lot of debt. You know, I was just constantly like, I was making money, but it was falling through my hands. And, you know, it was something that I had never learned growing up. And I was just felt like I was always chasing after that financial stability. And that's a huge piece of my Saturn return, that big lesson in my Saturn return, one of them. And then also I was ignoring signals from my body left and right. You know, I was drinking a lot. I was, again, with dating people that my body was sending me signals like, yo, this is not right.
Yeah.
You need to step out. And I was ignoring it and then just running myself into the ground. I was teaching Soul Cycle. I was teaching 15 classes a week. God, I was doing HIIT workouts on top of those 15 classes. I was drinking Celsius and coffee. And my body's like, yo, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I was just super disconnected from my body at the time.
Mm-hmm. You know that feeling you get when you crawl into a freshly made bed of silky bed sheets? It's probably my favorite feeling in the world. I've been traveling a lot lately, and every time I go to sleep in another bed, I miss my home. I miss my cozy earth sheets. I gotta tell you, these are the best high-quality sheets I've ever had the pleasure of sleeping on. And even my wife, Kylie, will agree, there are no other sheets that compare. They're soft, they're silky, and so comfortable, and you literally just melt into them. The reason they're so soft is that they're made from viscose from bamboo fabrics, which is softer than cotton, and as a huge bonus, is responsibly and sustainably sourced. On top of that, it's temperature regulating, which means it keeps you cool and comfy all night long, and the unbeatable luxury feel helps turn your bed into the most cozy sanctuary ever. And I'm not the only one who's crazy about them. Cozy Earth has been featured on Oprah's favorite list 7 years in a row. So give their sheets or any of their awesome products a try. They have a 10-year warranty on all their products and a 100-night sleep test to try it for 100 nights. And if you don't love it, you get your money back. But I know you'll love it as much as I do. And they're offering you, my listeners, a massively generous 40% off discount. So go to CozyEarth.com and use Mark at checkout for 40% off all their products. That's CozyEarth.com and use the code Mark for 40% off.
And then at what point do these beautiful experience, these train wrecks meet?
I know these two train wrecks. So I actually auditioned to be a Soul Cycle instructor.
You did?
Twice. Didn't get it both times, bro.
Was she your evaluator?
Dude.
I was helping her.
So I was in New York City at the time and I was like, I want to be a Soul Cycle instructor. I thought it was my thing. I literally was like, this is my calling in life. I was on the train every day at like 5 a.m. like listening to like EDM, like practicing my bike moves. Like thought I was manifesting. Left, like right, I would write down right. Krista Williams, Soul Cycle instructor. Like the way that I wanted it was so insane. And so I auditioned, and the audition process, you have to perform songs. You have to get on the mic and like perform your song. So I got my songs ready.
By yourself, just like kicking it?
With instructors in front. So there's a bunch of people in the room.
So you put it's on, a legit audition. It's legit.
It sounds like I'm scared already.
It was terrifying. I had a red lip on. I had like a full curl. I was like, okay, I'm ready. I put on the microphone, and there was something about me putting on the microphone that made me like want to jump out of my skin. And I was so uncomfortable being projected, having my voice projected. And from that point, I was like, oh, this is interesting. But I've always been resourceful. So I was like, I need to figure out how to be better on the microphone.
Yeah.
So at that point, I took years of vocal lessons in New York City. So during my corporate job, I would go uptown to take vocal lessons to be better on the microphone for Soul Cycle. I realized that was for almost 30, but I started to get really,
that's wild.
Isn't that wild? I started to get better on the mic. And then in my second audition process, I was introduced to Lindsay, who was an instructor, and she helped me with my second audition, which I didn't get, but we became friends. And so it was that process of
that's
like,
how you met.
Yeah, mm-hmm. of us, like me trying to figure out, me thinking Soul Cycle was my thing, but now seeing that, thank God, I'm not a, you know, no stress, but I'm so grateful that it brought me to her and brought us to something that's even more aligned than me being an instructor.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? You don't know that the calling you have, the sort of obsessive calling you have for being a soul suckler.
Right, soul suckle sucker. Yeah. Sucker dash.
But being a Soul Cycle instructor is motivating you to get to the path to meet Lindsay and Lindsay to meet you in order to create something together. That's the thing, is when a dream we have is not the dream, the dream we have is not the dream we had.
Yes.
Like allowing that to just be instead of spending your life being like, okay, well, I got to get on the stage at Soul Cycle. Instead, God's like, stage is actually over here. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So often we have expired dreams that we're still like pushing for and reaching for. And it's hard to know when to let them go. I feel like I had that with acting, where I was like pushing for it for much longer than I think my soul really wanted to. And oftentimes it the same skills and talents and passions fit into the thing that's like really meant for you, but it just comes in a different form.
Yeah.
So I had to, there was a point of like heartbreak of like, I guess we're done here. But then when I looked around, I was like, wait, I'm using my voice. Mm-hmm. There is a performative aspect to this. There is a creative aspect to this. There is a connection aspect to this. Like all the things that I love and was like good at and honing my skills in are right in front of me, you know, but I think it was an identity thing where I'm like, oh, I'm no longer pursuing acting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm no longer that.
Yeah.
I think it's like following what feels good. You know, it's like I was following what felt good. And although it didn't make sense at the time, I was still going on the path of what felt good. And I think SoulCycle was beautiful, but it was such a limited view of what I'm capable of, you know? And I think that's the thing with dreams sometimes is like, the dreams can be so much more limited than what God wants for us. And the more we can let go of this small idea of what our brain can contextualize, the better. Because even thinking about growing up in Ohio, you know, I grew up in a small town. No one would ever think that I'd be doing what I do now. And it's not like it's the craziest thing or it's the, you know, most groundbreaking thing to be a podcast host, et cetera. But everyone had desk jobs, you know, and worked at P&G or GE and stays no shade to that, stays in the paradigm. And so when I didn't have an idea of what I wanted to do in life, that was such a beautiful thing because I didn't have this box I was trying to fit in. I knew that I wanted something different. And I think when you're in your 20s, especially your, you know, mid to late 20s, it's such a period in time where you want to be put in a box. You want to put yourself with, you want to get married, you want to have kids, you want to be in a certain job. And it's like the more you can really just allow your life to unfold and just not grip to everything, the better it will become and the more aligned you will be.
Yeah, the gripping to the life we thought we needed to have, you know, I think about just how much of the script that ran the majority of my,
what was your script? Was
get married by 27, have kids by 30.
Everybody's script.
Everybody's 46. Script is
the same. So that's, now it's maybe get married by 30, have kids by 33. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just like inflation. It's just growing. But I remember when I woke up in the journey at 27, got engaged, broke off the engagement at 27. And I was my friend said it so well. He was the first of our friends to get married. And his wife cheated on him. They broke up. And I remember him saying to me, Mark, I feel like I'm standing on a train platform. And I used to be on the train, but I didn't get off myself. I got kicked off. And he said, so now I'm watching all these people living life and going through the script of who they should be. And I'm just observing it because I'm no longer in the same momentum. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself when I was just standing, you know, having left the story, which there was an interesting thing that occurred there, which was this recognition that I actually had a choice. Fuck, I didn't.
Yeah.
It seems so crazy to think that I made all these choices up until that moment, but I really look back and I'm like, was I actually choosing? Do you know what I'm saying?
That's the prefrontal cortex. So what's so crazy about your later 20s and the Saturn return period is actually your prefrontal cortex is coming online. So you're actually not making decisions from a conscious state. So the decisions you're making up until that point when your prefrontal cortex comes online are actually the programming of media, society, and parents. So you actually weren't choosing what was meant for you. So that's why when you turn 27, you know, in that period, you're like, oh, I actually want to leave this relationship. I want to quit this job. I want to do this thing.
Yeah.
And you start to make the decisions that seem the hardest and the most earth-shattering, but they're finally decisions that you and your soul wants. And what I think is interesting about your story, and I think even my story too, is I think when we think about our life plan when we're younger, it always first involves the relationship.
Yeah.
We're like, I thought my life plan was married by 28. Literally every single person says married, kids by a certain, it's always that external pressure of their relationship. Not many people are like, oh yeah, I thought I'd be, you know, doing whatever. It like always involves that other person. And I think for so many people during that time, that is sort of shaken up where they really choose like, who do I want to be with and who do I want to be outside of this predetermined number and path that society told me I need to be on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I think we're not taught to choose ourselves first.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't necessarily taught like find your husband, have a great life. It was like, you know, build your career.
In Georgia.
Yeah. Absolutely. I grew up in Georgia. It's like build your career, be successful. Then you can chill.
That was mine too.
Then you can chill. My dad was like, you're independent.
For that women, was our generation, like, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Save. Yeah. Protect yourself from needing to depend on a man.
My mom always said that, even when she was married to my dad, was like, always have your own money. I'm like, what? I'm 12. I'm 12. Dude, I'm like, I'm literally, this is so weird. She would be like, keep your girlfriends. I'm like, I'm literally 11.
I think.
Keep your girlfriends.
Oh, I feel like it's funny. I'm like, is dad Link going somewhere? Yeah.
I feel like at the time, there was this weird commentary around like the stay-at-home mom. Like there was this weird thing happened. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, four
my
kids.
Mom too, yeah.
And even though my dad wanted her to stay home.
Yeah.
I don't know if he wanted us to have the same path, which was interesting.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I
think
I agree with
like,
that.
You know, I think for the generations above often or around us, we witnessed women lose themselves and then end up in financially dependent, which means they couldn't leave.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we're now under the thumb of financial manipulation. And then, of course, the narrative societally was like, make your money, never depend on a man.
Yeah.
But the problem is then you end up so walled up. And true for men, too, because then the men are thinking, well, I never want to be controlling. I don't, not all men, obviously. Yeah. Some are like, yeah, this is great. But most men are thinking, I don't want to be like that.
Sure.
And so they go into their feminine. And then it really kind of, it inverses polarity.
Yes.
Which is so fascinating because it's like, imagine if an adult said to us, hey, you might want to make money so you have access to choice. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't depend on each other one day.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, being a woman raised in that messaging, which now you're seeing the inverse again of saying trad wife. And then you see other feminists saying, oh, women used to go and get half the stuff and go hunting. They weren't with the kids all day. I'm like, they probably actually were. I don't.
And the kids were probably strapped on and ready to hunt.
Yeah. Like their baby was attached to them and they were picking berries or whatever. Yeah. It's not to say that the contribution is massive.
Massive. Yeah.
But it's so interesting that now there's a retaliation. So I'm curious in your own coming home stories of your Saturn return. What was the journey like of reconciling the messages sent by your mothers, what you witnessed? Yeah. And then, because you both created, you know, wealth, you created the ability to be in choice. And then how do you balance still creating space for men?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like so many people, especially in that late 20s period, I just started to realize that the light bulb came on in my brain, how the way I show up in relationships and just in life was so deeply connected to my parents, which I know you know in your work, but it was the first time I was realizing it, you know, that I was actually creating my reality. Mm-hmm. And so much of it was rooted in, you know, how my parents raised me and their influence. And I went through a period of resentment. You know, I was like,
been there.
Yeah. I think a lot of us go through that period and get stuck.
I'm like still there, man.
Look what you did. But we get look what you did.
We totally get stuck there sometimes. I think I was there for a little bit where I'm like, dang, like you did this to me and now I'm this way and now I have to deal with this. And now this is showing up in my relationships. But I think I've come full circle to really so deeply have like compassion for my parents and where they were at and understanding, you know, how they grew up and what influenced them and what they were moving through at the time and their soul contract as husband and wife and partners in this life and how it's truly none of my business. So I've really, during my Saturn return, I had to, one, forgive in a lot of ways the things that I felt like were like scarlet letters on me from my parents that no, I have the ability to rewrite that. I have the ability to reprogram that. And also have a lot of like gratitude for the things that I feel like are beautiful parts of me that my parents gave me. So both at the same time. And then in relationship, I just feel like I have a part of my mother, or I took on this part that is like very self-sacrificing. And so in relationship, especially in my late 20s, that would show up as complete self-abandonment. This is, you know, definitely a codependent part of me where if the other person was good, satisfied, happy, whatever, I was good, even if that meant abandoning how I really felt mm-hmm. or what I really needed. And so it was years before I really got it. And I was attracting people who kind of like to be in that dynamic and play the part that made that work. But until I spent time by myself being single and truly not really engaging in relationship and understood myself more deeply and really walked back to myself and had a sense of like my center mm-hmm. and what that really, really felt like, could I then step into relationship and understand that I can always come back to that place, that is where safety is, that is where knowing is, that is where security is, and that within relationship, they would support that, enhance that, and it wouldn't feel like they were pulling me from it. And I felt like very wobbly. So it's been a journey. And I think with my husband, I've been able to really deeply solidify that feeling of self and also self within relationship before the self would disappear in relationship.
How do you negotiate that part of yourself that you were talking about seeking to resolve the self-sacrifice being a mother?
Yeah, I'm figuring it out now. Yeah, it's actually, it shows back up. That's why I think this is going to be a theme in my life that shows back up. And I'm excited for it because yeah. it almost like brings me to the next level every time it shows up. But my son is 20 months today and I feel like I'm just coming out of this like beautiful abyss of like the first year and a half, because you're still so in it. Yeah. And I know you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
And there is a part of me that just really enjoys and feels like called to just push Lindsay aside and just be like, this is my life now. This is my life in service to my son, to mm-hmm. my family, to my husband. But I have to be careful. It's a slippery slope. You know, because I can so easily do that based on my prior programming. And so now
it's about you.
Yeah. It's now about finding the moments where I can take a little time for myself or just say, you know, what do you need? And knowing that that moment can actually support my son and support my husband. I'm also noticing that I'm kind of wearing it as a badge of honor to not put myself first. So I'm just kind of like exploring that a little bit.
That's a good one. The martyr.
Yeah, the martyr for sure is there.
I got a bit of that one. That one's a good one.
Yes.
You get a lot of power from that bad boy.
Mm-hmm. But I have to say yeah. that.
Jesus, best one. Best yeah. martyr.
Yeah. Good I died for you. Brother. Yeah, literally. Fucking guys. And I came back.
I was like, hey, I'm doing it like my boy.
But the last thing I'll say is that, you know, I was in a healthy way, very self-focused before becoming a mom. Working on myself for years, being in therapy, yeah. all the things, like always attuned, analyzing, okay, how can I be better? How can I grow? How can I do better? And it's been a relief not to be so focused on myself, to be honest.
Yeah, what a gift, hey, like, to I'm know just, that the child would bring you out of. Because
mm-hmm. It was like self-obsession
in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think about that a lot in the journey of personal growth, that we go from, like, I have something that's wrong that needs to be fixed. And so at some point, we have to go through the process of this is no longer evidence of dysfunction. It's just mm-hmm. evidence of like more untapped potential, mm-hmm. which is such a different way of orienting to
oh,
it.
That's cool.
I do want to come back to like how you two together as friends triggered each other's beautiful stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wanted to hear about your part in that mm-hmm. journey too.
And my part's mom related to abundance, right? I think my mom was part of the generation. I don't know if other people's moms relate to this, but it was a lot of overfunctioning. My mom was doing everything in the household. She was the one that was disciplining. She was the one managing the money. She was the one working full time. She was the one cooking the meals. She was the one managing social, you know, things for us. And, you know, for me as a kid, that was like, mom's the worst. Like, she sucks. Like, she's, you know, the one that's like cracking the whip. Like, we like dad. He's chill. He hangs out with us on Sundays. It's sick. Sometimes we get ice cream once a week. And so I had this relationship where I saw women overfunctioning, and I heard the messaging that women need to have their own money. Women need to succeed. Success is like one of the values that you have. And money was something that in my family really valued, really, really valued money. But the men, the way that men and women showed up related to it was that men had to do very little for it and the women had to do a lot. So I remember in my marriage, I was the breadwinner, and it was something where I noticed myself in the pattern of overfunctioning, of doing every single thing, and almost using the money as a way to keep our connection and as a way to like prove that I could handle it or manage or, you know, keep us going, and sort of keep myself also subconsciously in the position of power in the relationship. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to be in the more powerful position because that feels safer for me. And I remember one time, it was a holiday, and I was with my family. My parents are separated, or they're divorced, and they are in new relationships. And it was Thanksgiving, and the dads, like my dad and my stepdad, were sitting on the couch just watching football, just like totally zoned out, not participating, not communicating, just completely like zombies. And the women were cooking, cleaning, talking, preparing, doing everything. They were just flying around the house. And I was like, oh, this would have been my life and my relationship, where the man just sort of like continues to like devolve and like no longer participate in life and just sort of become quiet. There's just an aspect of losing the masculinity where you lose your vitality. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to be in that dynamic. I wanted to be in a dynamic where I could be in my feminine, I could be in my softness, and I could create with abundance, but I could also be in a frame with a man that was very self-led in his own desire for abundance. And so now that's kind of been in my journey of being single now, is finding men that have a great relationship with money and a great relationship with their creatorship and a great relationship with how they move energy in the world. And getting out of just the belief that for women, you have to overfunction to be valuable. You have to overdo to be like seen as considered.
Yeah, it's such a delicate balance to trust and open and surrender into a connection with someone. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like, want to maintain access, of course, to your own sovereignty, but not to the place where you're like building an escape route, you know, 100%. All the time. And that's such a...
It is such a balance.
Because I would say, like, my wife and I talk about this, that it is actually important from a nervous system perspective that her or I have the capacity to leave.
Yep.
Which doesn't mean that you're leaving.
Yes. Yeah.
But that way we could show up fully to one another. Mm-hmm. It's a really strange paradox to hold.
Like, now I would definitely do, I didn't legally get married. So we had a ceremony, but we didn't actually legally get married. But I would definitely do a prenup or postnup, just to get really clear with each other, because I think it's better for you to be clear with one another before the state is. And I think that's the thing about it. It's like, if we take money from a place of neutrality, where we can just look at money and without the story of like, this means you're staying, this means you're going, this means you love me, this means you're not. And we're just like, this is energy. How are we going to like do this if things blow up? How are we going to be with this money, or how are you going to be with this legal agreement, so that we can decide on something before the state decides on something? I think that can feel so much safer. But it is something that's weird. And I don't know. I obviously didn't get it right in my relationship, because I remember a period being like, I'm going to go all the way in. Like, even 8 years in, I was like, I haven't gone all the way in yet. I haven't like gone 2 feet in to the relationship. And it was almost like when I put 2 feet in was when I realized I wanted to be both feet out. Was like my journey with that.
Yeah, that 1 foot in was actually on purpose.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And we both were kind of like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting when we explore that the ambivalence or the hesitancy actually comes from a wise place.
Yes.
You know?
100%.
Which we're so used to witnessing it 100%. And being like, oh, this is just how you're supposed to live. You're supposed to be unsure.
Yes.
Not to say that your partner is always going to be a hell yeah, because that's definitely not, I'm for sure not a hell yeah for Kai all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm teaching our son fart jokes, like, why? So when you structured this book, how did you decide to structure it?
So we knew we wanted to actually write it, which was a good piece. We thought about the themes that came up for each of us, you know, throughout the years of the podcast and just us sharing our stories. with people. And so, you know, themes like for Krista, the body, family relationships, mm-hmm. like the mother wound, et cetera. And for me, you know, I was single for a long time, so relationships and now being married, and having a career pivot, which I did. So we just thought about those themes mm-hmm. and wanted to just go deeper, share stories we've never shared before. We wanted to pull in wisdom and just gems from our podcast guests like you. You're in the book more than one time, Mark Groves. Mm-hmm. And and just bring in the practices and tools, both tactical and spiritual, that have changed our lives. Mm. So yeah, as Krista says, it's a meal. It's 330 mm-hmm. pages.
Yeah, it's a meal. I think the beginning, we started by helping people connect with their soul and their spirituality, because we just feel like that's the foundation for everything, is to be able to connecting with self. And then we go to the most external. So it's like soul, and then you go family relationships, romantic relationships, and then we go all the way to the end to like career and money. We wanted to people to develop and like sort of ground in like who you are and why you're doing what you're doing, and have that deep understanding of being able to connect with yourself. Because I think if I would have found myself, capital S self, soul, earlier, I felt like my life began when I found myself. Yeah. And so I wish, and you know, I don't have any regrets, but if I would have been able to connect with that aspect of me
at the start or at the, mm-hmm.
I would be at least happier in life.
I'm curious, when you two began the podcast, was the idea of soul already within each of your experience? One.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Or was it birthed through the podcast?
I think I found it through the podcast, specifically mm-hmm. in our conversation with Elisa Romeo, who I know you know. And I started to soul journal and was just profoundly changed by that practice. And I think I was someone who looked externally always. I was like, well, what are other people doing? You know, I would always look in books like, okay, so what's the answer? What should my next step be? Or what does my dad think? Or what does my mom think? It was never looking and turning inward to be like, well, how do I feel? And what do I know? You know, and where am I guided? Where am I being pulled? And so when I connected with my soul, I just remember that first time. It was like just a night in on a Friday. And, you know, I was hoping someone would text me to ask me to go somewhere.
wasn't 11 p.m. yet.
Yeah, the soul doesn't hang out on Wednesdays. Yeah. It's Friday yes. when you have other choices.
And I sat down to soul journal because I was like, I guess I'm not getting the look. And yeah, man, I mean, she had so much for me. She had so much wisdom, so much clarity, so much love. I was like overwhelmed. I just remember crying so deeply and like such a... Like, I was so thankful. I was like, whoa, there you are. Like, I can't believe you've always been here. And, you know, and she's just so, she's always there. And she's so forgiving and so collaborative and so like, oh, good girl. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, whenever you want to connect, I'm here. So that was the beginning for me. And it just unlocked so much. I began to trust myself more. I began to really hear the, you know, my inner voice, with the voice of my soul, guide me in, you know, relationships and career and creativity. And, you know, I reconnected to my singing voice, and she was like a huge part of that, and mm-hmm. just how I was like making music and writing. And so, yeah, it's been interesting. And I think sometimes we go through seasons that feel hard or very different from what we're used to. And we're like, where's our soul? Like I through motherhood, I feel more like psychic and connected than ever. But however, I've had moments of being like, I don't know. Like, I'm like, where's my soul? Like, where's that connection, you know?
Yeah.
Because I just feel so different. So I do think like she's always asking us to like get curious with her and like just find more ways to feel connected to her in different seasons of life.
Beautiful.
How do you feel connected to yours?
Nature.
Like, how does a man feel
nature.
Connected to
nature? Nature. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Silence. The things I avoid.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, meditation is where I find my soul.
I know.
I'm busy.
Yeah, it is. That's what people ask. I'm like, I'm going to say everything that's unsexy. It's turning off your phone. It's going outside.
It really
is. Being quiet. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's all those things that you don't want to do is when you hear the voice of your soul.
I recently, I was reflecting on when I did ayahuasca, like a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. on the second journey, I had all these, it was 7 days in Peru, and I did three journeys. And on the second journey, I remember going in with intentions, and one of them was asking questions about direction for my life. Mm-hmm. And that, first off, I got smashed by ayahuasca. Of course. In the
session. When you said that, I was like, oh, my girl had things to say. She's like, direction? You want direction?
Well, let me tell you, that first session, I remember thinking ayahuasca would be gentle on me. I would like a gentle introduction. And it was. Then when I finished that session, I was like, oh, this isn't that big of a deal. Should have never thought that, because the next one I got eaten by a panther, and I was going down its GI tract. I mean, I was, no wonder I make poop jokes. I was poop.
Wow.
But all that to say, the medicine said to me, why would we give you more information when you don't do what we already tell you? And I was like, oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Then, of course, my butt's like, we should probably let this all go. So but I was recently reflecting on that. And it just came to me that when you don't live a truth you know, you trade a truth you need.
Say it one more time.
So when you don't actually integrate something you know, you trade something you need. And that like recognition that we need time to be with nature, that technology is, I think, fucking us up a lot. Yeah. Which is really, it's fucked me up, and I've had to make a return from that. Mm. Because I think technology represents consciousness on a lot of levels, but also it's this strange thing, like everything humans do, that there's this, we're literally having our attention farmed. So what does it mean to have your attention farmed? It's like the Matrix, except instead of being in pods, we're just like willingly opening our phones and signing up to being extracted from. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot about that, because I think of the structure of how you did this is so important, because if you don't start with that connection to self, for me, my experience was 27, the breakup, blah, blah. Yes. But it was actually when I read Man's Search for Meaning, because I didn't even think about having meaning or a purpose or a, you know what I mean?
Kills me.
Yeah.
It kills me for men. I just like, that just like, I think women, and I could be wrong, in my experience with women,
women are not wrong. Just so
women are the best. I do feel like women have always wanted meaning. I think because of the fact women always seek outside, we always try and find the meaning outside. And I think the goal of women in life and the feminine is to find the meaning within. Mm-hmm. And I think for men, they always have the meaning within, and they actually need to seek the meaning outside to benefit the society and culture.
That's so great. The role of father,
the role of king is to watch over the kingdom. And so, you know, for men, it is so important that we are empowering them to support something greater than themselves. And I think that's why men are being farmed more than ever. I think women have a harder time on social media, but there's gambling and there's porn.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that people are not talking about. And we're just
like one boob away from an addiction.
Oh, no. Yes. No, the men in the addiction impulse and the way that they are siphoning their life force energy through those things is so crazy.
Yeah, not to mention that society, the narrative about men just feeds the shame. And then you have young boys who are like, well, Andrew Tate's not apologizing, so why am I apologizing? Yeah. Like, he's happy.
Yeah.
That's arguable. But then they're like, well, I don't want to be why is everyone telling me I'm broken and toxic just because I'm men? And you're a mother to a son, which for my wife, that gave her a lot more context. His sweetness, the essence, the sensitivity, you know, and you think we just...
Especially, boys are, I find to be in a beautiful way, so much more sensitive. I think there's science behind that, actually. I just read something the other day.
We're not going to fact check.
Yeah, I won't. So.
We don't fact check on this podcast. We like misinformation.
There's something to it. But the siphoning of life force, I just think about, what does that mean for the home?
Well, I think, the return, I think it all is obviously by design in a beautiful way. You know, like I think of leaving Instagram and coming back, and by leaving, I access choice. Yeah. And then coming back was by choice. Yeah. But I do want to ask, because I heard from Lynn's, but I wanted to hear from you, what was your relationship to soul at the beginning too?
Mm-hmm. I think I've been saying this lately. I'm like, so it's really hard for me to access memory and access anything like outside of feelings and how I felt during times. So I don't really know much about like any time period in my life besides if I felt good or I felt bad. I'm just like a very weird, like nebulous mercurial creature. But I think for me in my life, I remember feeling I remember feeling so anxious and depressed that was the relationship I had with myself. And I remember being so out of sorts in my desire for meaning in life. I was nihilistic when I was in high school. Like, I was just like, what are we doing here? What's the point? So I kind of always had a soul led, but it was always put through the voice of a really pushy inner critic and a really pushy part of me. And I think when I really discovered my soul was when I was in my 20s and the beginning of my Saturn return, when I left my job, I left my relationship. I went and lived in Patagonia for a month off grid, and I learned to meditate during that time. And that was the first time I was really given a glimpse into like the peaceful nature of what my mind could be, because I had not really found a inner landscape or relationship with my mind that felt peaceful. And once I could really quell the mind, then I could hear the soul. And my soul had been leading my whole life. You know, my soul has been such a beautiful part of my experience, and I'm so grateful for her and her guidance. But I wasn't able to really have that like understanding of how she was there for me and how she was really like gonna take the lead. And so I would say it was when I started to meditate, was when I really got to like see clearly how that was my soul. Because I think before I thought my anxiety was my soul, but it wasn't, obviously.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I was like, oh no, she wants more. And she's like, yeah, you better get going, bitch. And I'm like, my soul wants more.
Like, damn, my soul is a hustler.
I know, honestly. I was like, my soul says I need to make six figures.
Gary Vee's consulting your soul.
Honestly.
Like, hustle.
Yeah, honestly.
Just the soul relationship, you know, for anyone that's almost 30 or anyone that's above, like just cultivating and developing that relationship with their soul is the most meaningful thing in your life. To believe that there is a co-collaborator that lives within you and outside of you, that's guiding you and watching you, can only benefit you and your mental health and your relationships. And it's what makes life magical. Like, there's just a magical element when you realize that there's this beautiful aspect of you that just lives, that's just like guiding you through life on this mythical journey of something really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I could not be more grateful for my soul for choosing this incarnation and this experience and for always being a part of me and what's made life livable, really.
Mm. Yeah, even when you are both talking about soul, it makes, like, there's this, an essential richness to the dialogue that you realize is absent when you're just talking about things like six figures or strategy.
Yeah.
Not to say, like, I still think that, like, a lot of people think that authenticity means being void of strategy. Huh. But that's not true, you know, that we can do both, and we have to do both.
Yeah.
But you can't just, if you're truly being your authentic self in every moment, come on now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there is an important, choosing to put on a mask is very different than not choosing, but still wearing one.
Yeah.
You know, and when you guys talk about starting with this access to a trust that there's a greater divine that put you two together, that created this, and then this is going to be in people's ears and eyes. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing that saying that you can read a book and not understand the book, but get everything from the book. You know what I mean? And that,
that's been so many spiritual texts for me, like A Course in Miracles, you know, like that. You're like, I don't get this, but like, I cellularly, something's happening.
Yes.
Yeah. The run-on sentence. You're like, this is so long.
No,
but yet,
honestly.
I think that's the power of books, though.
Yeah.
You know, I think we can hear things on podcasts and they're so powerful, but like, there's something when I read a book, to your point, it's cellular.
Hold it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So different than a Kindle.
I know it is.
You know, and I don't know if there's something, it's like maybe because every sacred text was a text.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know?
Well, there's like a manifestation element where it's like thought, it's like living here, thought brought through, written through fingers, and then on words. And it's like, and then, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's like a real mystical.
Well, and then you two through relationship created this. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like it's where a writer would just channel it through themselves. Yeah. You actually channeled it together.
Yeah.
Which is wild. It's the alchemy of that.
We did every other chapter, basically. So I wrote a chapter, she wrote a chapter, because we didn't want to do universal we language. Because we've had similar experiences in life, but very different. And it made it so much easier to write where I could just be fully in my experience and channel, and she could too. And
about each person's and then review each other's.
Yes, exactly. So exactly.
Which you've always done.
We didn't really review till the very end.
Till the very end.
I didn't want to read.
Yeah, it's hard to go back and like read your own writing and then her, because like I think my fear in reading hers, I was like, oh shoot, is hers going to be like 10 times better than mine? You know, the comparison voice and like, or would it be so different that it wouldn't be cohesive in the book? Yeah. Like,
that's why you got an editor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, we had a great team, but
We did have to check the voice at the beginning where we're like, how funny are we being? Or like, how light? Or like, how deep?
Yeah, my wife and I, because we wrote it together and then switched spots. But my humor is so much different than my wife's. Yes,
I liked it though.
It got, so worked it got really like, it got, my regular offensiveness got reduced in the delivery.
And like when you
which
write
is great.
Every day, sometimes you feel different. Like some days I'm like, I am Plato. And some days I'm like,
I know.
Literally.
So different.
Yeah. Chris Rock. Yeah. Like you just the way that you write, sometimes I'd be like writing in haiku and sometimes I'd be like writing, you know what I mean? It's like the way that you change the voice sometimes also happens too. But I wanted to say something just about the soul piece that you brought in when it was like, I do think that there is a different temperature and energy in the room when we talk about something like that, when we talk about soul. Like, you know, I go to church, like, and it's just a part of my spiritual algorithm. I have a lot of different like lineages in my spiritual algorithm, but I really like going to church because there's an experience of feeling the Holy Spirit that you feel, where you can feel the frequency of something that feels different. And I just hope for people that they can experience, whether it's soul, whether it's singing, whether it's creativity, whether it's nature, that mystical aspect of being human, or that other aspect where it kind of brings you outside of your own form and experience. It helps you see that there's so much more happening and there's so much more available.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious, in your soul's journey together as friends, what has been the greatest gift of your friendship with one another?
I could cry.
Yeah.
I always could cry with this. I think for me, what I'll say is that, so when I was in my marriage, I think one of the things that actually was like an inspiration to leave was realizing that I felt closer and more honest and true and more myself and more seen and safe with Lindsay than I did in my relationship. Mm. Where I was like, oh, Lindsay and I are able to have conflict and come together closer. Lindsay and I are able to like manage emotions and manage expectations and communicate. And like all the aspects of partnership that weren't working for me were just really magnified because of our connection. Where I was like, wow, this is like my husband. I was like, this is my actual husband. No, it was like,
we've been husband and wife
and many lives we've been dating, but just having her as like my anchor point and my set point for what a healthy friendship is and what a healthy relationship is has been such a gift. And now she sets the standard for me and my friendships, where I'm like, the friends that have intimate access to me, because that's very, very few people, you know, her and maybe one other person have intimate access to me. How do I manage and run those relationships? How do I maintain sovereignty yet still be in relationship? How do I communicate? How do we have conflict? How do we have resolution? How do we show up for one another? And it's been such a gift to be in partnership with someone like her, because whenever we reach a moment where we need a clearing or something's going on, it never feels like a problem.
Yeah, it never feels like the end or like a...
Yeah.
There's so much evidence that the relationship has so much investment into it.
Yes.
And I think a huge part of that is just our ability to take self-responsibility.
Yeah,
you know,
huge.
We're not going into a conflict worried that, you know, the other person is going to just like spew a whole bunch of blame or not see what they're bringing to the moment. I trust Krista. She trusts me to be so self-aware, you know, almost to a fault. We're like, I think it was my fault. I think it was my fault. Honestly. But it's just so I then don't have to put up, she doesn't have to put up any like guards of like, okay, I gotta be ready for like the unprocessed shit she might spew. It's like so conscious, so aware. Yeah, so sovereign. It's like, it's very, very safe.
And I think in the book we write about one of the practices that we do that, you know, might be helpful for your audience. It's called clearing conversations. And a clearing conversation is essentially clearing like the psychic debris or the energy between you two. And whether that's felt between the both of you or just felt between you, it can be so helpful to call to attention what needs tending to in relationship. We usually do clearing conversations on walks. It's helpful for your brain to process things when you're walking. And it's also helpful and supportive for you to be moving towards the same goal when you're walking two together. So your brain is kind of registering that you're both working towards something and you're both going in the same direction. And then it's also helpful to not be looking at each other in the eye when you're having a hard conversation. There's the automatic primal response of like being in prey predator mode when you're in that state.
Right. Yeah.
And so we'll be, you know, on walks when we have them. And in those situations, we'll usually talk about like only using I statements. Like it's like, I was feeling like this, this brought up this for me. I'm curious if, you know, this, you can relate to the story I'm telling you. Like the story I'm telling myself is that you don't care about this relationship and can you help me see the truth? It's always I, it's always us, it's always our experience. And then we just kind of try and find the place where we can meet together. And that sort of I languaging, the phrases like, help me to see the truth, the phrases like the story I'm telling myself are just so helpful for us. And I think that's allowed us to deepen and that's allowed us to really know ourselves much more deeply where in our conversations, I'm able to see my stories where I'm like, yo, I have the story that no one cares as much as me. I have the story that I have to do everything, you know, whatever they are. And then it's not only like deepening us, but it's deepening my understanding of myself. And so the clearing conversations, we kind of give a structure for people in there. But for anyone that wants deep intimacy, and this is for people that want to commit to deep intimacy in relationships, like for people that want to fuck around, that's fine. But this is like when you actually want to go somewhere, clearing can be helpful.
And then, yeah, I mean, Krista's, she can, she's the gift that keeps on giving, to be honest.
It's true. Anxiety, herpes.
What a gift.
Krista is so dedicated to growth, like on a whole other, other level. I've never met anyone like her. And it just inspires me, you know, if I get stagnant, if I get complacent, she helps me to see aspects of myself that I'm totally missing in a moment. Cause like we're together through very vulnerable moments, through highs and lows in the business and personal life. And she's really able to pick up on, you know, aspects of myself that I am just not recognizing, like really beautiful, positive aspects of myself that I am, you know, undermining in a low moment. And she also just brings the humor and the levity that I think really helps like my soul to remember why we're here, you know, because I can get very serious. I can get very like hard on myself and critical and just kind of in the weeds of life. And she helps me to kind of like grow above the weeds. That was a pretty good metaphor. I'll work on
grow
that
above
one.
The weeds.
Grow
that's a
above
good one.
The weeds.
Say that at my wedding. This is going to help you grow above the weeds.
But yeah, I mean, I had some friendship trauma in middle school, high school that was like very, very hard for me to come back from, and especially with female relationships. And our relationship has completely healed that and actually put me in a position to recognize healthy female relationships, how to cultivate them, how to model them for myself, for other people, for, you know, maybe my future daughter. It's like, I'm just, it's changed my life. And, you know, we both brought up in each other some of the hardest lessons, you know, like I think that's also something that people do not expect and do not leave room for in these deep, intimate relationships, is that these people are going to bring things up. They're going to call you to the next version of you that is a higher, more embodied version of you. And it's not going to be pretty or easy all the time, you know? And I think at first when that started to happen, I was like, get me out of here, you know, which is really uncomfortable. But man, I mean, it's just changed. It's changed everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't it wild when you set the template in your body of what it means to have an amazing human who takes responsibility, who can communicate, who's committed? My friend said this so beautifully because her family was very divided with different perspectives, which family wasn't, but especially over COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually didn't just survive. They thrived. Indifference. Wow. And I said to her, what was the key to that? And she said, because the agreement we all made as a family was that every conversation prioritized the preservation of the relationship first. And if anyone moved away from that value in the way they were communicating, the conversation was over.
Mm.
And I'm like, wow, that's so beautiful.
My face is what family is that, bro?
But what a beautiful, like, shouldn't that be
stunning?
That
should be the world.
That's where I thought to myself, oh, that's actually what we need to do all the time with every relationship. But, you know, the sort of sadness that held with that was that that hasn't been modeled by the people in politics, media, public
true.
Health.
Yeah.
So that wasn't modeled. So of course, how would anyone know how to have it if adults didn't model it, much like relationships, if it wasn't modeled? Okay, mm-hmm. I know we got to wrap up in a sec. So the last question I want to hear from both of you is, who is this book for, mm-hmm. and what do you hope that they get from it?
Yeah, this book is for anyone moving through a season of change. You know, this period in your late 20s is absolutely going to be a banger for people. It is not for the faint of heart. And if those listening are moving through it, you know, it feels like everything's falling apart. It could feel like you are so, so lost, but you are really becoming during this period, becoming more of who you really mm-hmm. are and who you're meant to be. And, you know, I just have hope that our stories, our humor, our warmth and love, I hope you feel in these pages, the wisdom from our podcast guests, and just the accountability in there too, will be something that you can turn back to time and time again when you're moving through change, because spoiler, it will happen over and over again in life. And so if this can be, you know, your guide to being in right relationship with change, then I will be happy.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am so hard on myself, and that's something I work on. And I read this book and I'm so proud of it. Like, awesome. I am like, it makes me emotional because I never thought I could have something where I'm like, no, this is good. You know, like anything I do, I'm like, everything we do, I leave and I'm like, could it have done better? Mm-hmm. And this is just an amazing book. And I'm so proud to just bring the energy and frequency to help people remember that they're not lost, that their soul knows what it's doing and it's taking them where they need to go. And the more we can be conscious and present to our life and their lives, and the changes that we, you know, encounter, just the better we can live. Like, I just want people so badly to know their souls and to know something greater than themselves and their ego and their pain. And I hope that the book can support them in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as much as I've been in so many conversations about purpose, meaning, it never fails to surprise me that I lose my way and forget.
I know. Human, baby.
Yeah. And this conversation has been such a rich remembering. And I finally got my copy of the book.
You got the copy, baby.
So we love you.
I'm going to get up in this bad boy.
We're so grateful for you.
Yeah, so truly. Grateful for both of you.
It's just such a gift. Like, I just remember looking up to you for so long, and now I know you. I look down on you.
Is this a high joke?
No, I know you, and I just love you even more. You're mm-hmm. such a good friend. You're so present. You're so kind. You're so supportive. You're so loving, and you're just so dedicated to the truth.
Yeah.
And it's such a gift. Like, truly, I feel grateful that, like, I have you in my life mm-hmm. for real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right back at both of you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I love that you let space for Lindsay to go.
I know. Well, I was going to go into a whole tangent on truth, because, like, if I think about the one person that, like, in times during 2020 and the like, where I was like, yo, give me strength, I was like, I was looking to you for sure.
That's a good one.
You know, you're so brave, you're so on purpose, you are so in your truth, and I know it wasn't easy. And I definitely don't think I was out there spewing my own truth, but your work was working on me, and that I continued to kind of like refer back to that anytime I feel like a little clogged here, where I'm like, can I say what I really want to say? Oh, I think, man, about you. Yeah.
I remember those moments.
That on our pod. Yeah, we will.
I remember those moments. But, you know, I do remember turning to your guys' podcast and being like, oh, they're going for it too.
We are, in our own way.
And I love that, because it was almost, you know, it's when you're speaking alone, the social risk is so high, but then it inspires someone else to speak, which inspires someone. And now, you know, there's a whole chorus, which is great. Man, I just love our conversations. I'm so happy we got to hang out. Thanks for coming on the pod. Everybody, go buy this book, okay? And get the audiobook too, because if you listen to it at 2x speed and read it, you retain more. And that's a double sale.
Is that true?
Is that true?
That's it. Well, it could be. I don't know. Yes.
2x
I've read that misinformation.
10x is 2x. Buy 10 of them.
And if you know someone who's going through change, gift this book. What a beautiful thing to give to someone, because good Lord, if we could all find our souls so much earlier and even know it's a thing to find meaning and be connected to ourselves and to be able to trust, life would be so much different. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Love you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.